What is up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages and genders and identities, whatever. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. My guest tonight is the magnificent Maxwell Barna. Max is a journalist as well as a photographer, as well as someone who dabbles in poetry and has even written some short stories. He's done awesome work for a lot of different publications, Vice being one of them. Powerful, Maxwell. He's an all-around sweetheart with a great outlook on life. He's very humble. He's very positive. Stays away from all the negative shit. He's got some killer stories. We delved a bit into... Well, one of the things that I really enjoyed that we talked about was the rise of this kind of clickbait culture that the internet has provided us with that is seemingly a direct result in a few factors, but two of them being, one, a lack of time. No one has the time to do their due diligence on a story anymore. And so these clickbait articles kind of feed that fast-paced life that we have, but also the curiosity that we have. This kind of just satiates that appetite. And also this phenomenon of people having all this ability to communicate for the first time in history on a worldwide level, and rather than talking to each other, we're kind of just talking at each other, talking past each other. And so, you know, a lot of things have come as a result of that. And one of them is this kind of clickbait culture, where there's this polarizing article headline, and most of the time when you click on that article and you read it, the headline is so misleading. A lot of the time the article isn't even about what the headline insinuated in the first place. So we had some fun kicking that one around. He's also, like I said, got some cool stories and is just a very positive dude. It was a great pleasure talking to him, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode. If you do enjoy the episode, head over to iTunes, especially iTunes. I know I'm on Spotify. I'm on a bunch of places. I think 10 of them. And to be totally honest, 8 out of 10 are bullshit. It's really about Spotify. It's really about iTunes. But if we're being totally honest, it's really about iTunes. So do me a favor. Head over to iTunes. And if you enjoy the show, if you like what you're hearing, if you don't like me, that's one thing. But if you listen to this and you don't like Maxwell Barna, you can fuck off. I don't want your rating anyway. Because anybody who doesn't like this guy is either a crackhead. I mean, even crackheads like this guy. I don't know. I'm just assuming crackheads like this guy. But if you do like it, leave a rating. Subscribe. Leave a review. As a matter of fact, don't leave a review. Leave me a short story in my iTunes review. Something that is not pertaining at all to whether or not you actually like this podcast. Treat it as a writing prompt. Go to iTunes. Your topic is, I would like a short story of the horror genre, where the antagonist is a man with raw turkeys for hands instead of actual hands, seeing as how it is nearly Thanksgiving. So that's it. This is your assignment, boys and girls. But seriously, please leave a rating, subscribe, say something nice, or don't say anything at all, whatever. And if you don't like the show, fuck off. Okay? All right. So without further ado, please give it up for Maxwell Barna and his majestic beard.
How you know, All right. And 3, 2, 1, we are live. What's going on, brother?
How's it going, man? How you doing?
It's going good. How's all this random snow in the middle of November treating you?
You know, man, I'm not going to lie to you. It's been nice to have some sun, but I'm definitely getting that. What do they call it? The seasonal affective disorder.
You get it in reverse? You've gotten too much summer?
No, I've gotten too much November.
Oh yeah.
Cloudy.
Dude, I don't know about you, but I live in Vernon, and I get, what did you guys get? Like maybe eight inches, something like that?
It was enough for me to throw the Jeep in four wheel drive and start doing donuts in the street for sure.
Oh, you got an XJ, right?
Relates to in snow inches.
Dude, we got a foot up here. We got a foot. It was so quick. I don't know. You have the Jeep, right? You got an XJ?
Yeah.
What year?
It's a 2001. I honestly hate it. I hate it so bad.
Do you really?
Oh, I've made a ton of really, really questionable financial moves in my time. Mm. And this is probably my worst, like for sure.
Yeah, I got a 2000.
Oh my God. And how do you like it?
I mean, it's kind of this hate-love relationship where, you know, prior to owning a Jeep, I didn't know the first thing about maintaining a vehicle or doing anything, like, at all, dude. And then I went out and I bought this XJ because our mutual buddy Keith is kind of a Jeep head, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, yeah. Well, I've got Keith, this.
Keith, Nick, and all those kids are really big Jeep guys.
Yeah, well, Nick is a different breed of Jeep guy. It seems to be, like, the only thing. If he could boil Jeeps down and inject them intravenously, we'd have to intervene. But
I mean, you really gotta love something to give it. And the best part is, he didn't even buy that Jeep banana yellow. He made that Jeep banana yellow and then turned the interior banana yellow as like a joke.
You know,
like, you really have to take your shit seriously when you're like, I'm gonna make my whole daily driver into this interesting Jeep bro joke. I love it so much. Like, his Instagram is the best.
He did a good job with that thing, if we're being honest.
Dude, I'm jealous. I'm like, mine is black. It should be beautiful. And I fucking hate that thing. Oh, can I curse, by the way? Is that
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, cool. This is, there's no rhyme or reason to this thing.
My plan here is, since I've never done one of these things before, I'm just going to keep drinking rum until things get weird. So,
you know, I'm really upset. There's something going on with my stomach, and I had all these plans to sit down with a glass of bourbon and enjoy this podcast, and for some reason nothing is sitting in me, so I gotta go raw on this one. It's a little upsetting. I can't even have water. But it was kind of out of nowhere. All of a sudden, I feel like it used to be a gradual thing. Like, here's a dusting of snow. Here's maybe a couple of inches after that, and then here we go, you know, winter's gonna kick off. And I'm coming home from work, and I'm in this little Elantra, because I have the Jeep, my wife has the Elantra, and the Elantra is better on gas, so I'm like, screw it, man, I'm taking that to work. I didn't know what was going to happen, and I'm the type that my understanding with snow has always been, don't lose momentum, because the second you lose momentum is when you're really fucked. So, you know, if the speed limit's 45, I'm doing like 45, 50, and I make it all the way back, but there was one or two moments where, you know, I cut the wheel and the car was like, nah, baby, we're going straight. We ain't going, we're not turning right. We're not doing left. So we're going straight.
Yeah.
And,
I think that's like the only good thing about having not just like a car that you don't care about, but a Jeep like me, that the same thing was happening to me, but my only concern was like, okay, well, if I could not hit anything else, that'd be great. But I'll do a backflip over a fucking children's playground and not worry about what's going to happen to that truck. Like, I hope that thing catches on fire every day. I wake up, and my first thought most days are, man, I really hope someone stole my Jeep while I was sleeping.
I recognize, because you made a post and you were excited about the snow. And as you're talking about the snow, I'm looking at this very familiar overhead liner. Mm. And I'm going, oh, that looks like something.
Oh, yeah. That saggy headliner? Oh, baby. It literally hits my face.
I swapped it out. I swapped it out for a flannel one.
Yeah. Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's such a me thing, too.
Yeah, I actually picked it up from Keith's brother, Kyle.
Yeah, I tried to get Nick to help me do that over the summer, but he was super, super busy. And the problem is I also don't really care enough about it. Like, this is the thing. Like, I grew up in garages. Like, I've built cars. I had a Mustang in high school. I was that guy. And it was like a labor of love that you understood. You know what I mean? Like, you walked into that vehicle being like, okay, this is going to be a thing. We're going to work on it. It's going to be great. We're going to learn some shit. And the only thing I've learned while owning this Jeep is that I actually want to, there are sinkholes all over Philly, and I just wish I could fall into one of them, just one, you know, like at speed. I mean, listen, I know I'll survive. That thing is tough as nails, but like, kill the Jeep, just take it.
Yeah, it seems God, to be.
You hear me? Take my fucking Jeep.
It seems to be a theme. I don't know. Like I said, the only reason I bought it is because I previously knew nothing about vehicles, and I was like, well, if I get this thing, at least I have references. I can call Keith, or I can call Toth and try to get an answer. And to be totally honest, it worked. You know, one thing would fail. I'd call somebody up. They'd walk me through it. I'd go and buy the part and do it. Next thing would fail. The only thing was I didn't bank on like, oh no, it is a never ending cascade of failing parts. That is.
Yeah, I think my Jeep cost me on average like $400 a month. Like I went to go get, oh, the day last week where I got all my ramen where everyone was talking shit on me for like an hour, I got to the parking lot and I look at my truck and I'm like, God, I hate you. Some people look back longingly on their vehicles and like, damn, you look pretty today. Oh my God. I look back and I was like, I want a fucking divorce from my Jeep. I see that my exhaust is sagging literally to the floor. And I was like, okay. Dope. I don't know how this happened, but like now I've got to fix this bullshit.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I cannot stand it. Maybe they've done things with them. Maybe if like you give a shit about these trucks, like, yeah, I'm told they run forever, but truthfully I bought mine. So let's go back. I think it's February of this past year. I had gotten some insurance money because some dude, you know, it's not unreasonable for me to wake up and want my car to be wrecked or stolen, because that was actually how I got the money to buy this thing, is that I had a nice little sedan. It got hit. I got some insurance money from it because it was parked while somebody plowed into it. And I spent no shit 2 months shopping for the perfect Jeep. And every time I would come across one, it'd be up for like a half hour, and then some kid in New Jersey would take it. Fuck you.
And then, yeah, it's him. It's him.
And so I finally found this Jeep one night, and it was the guy posted at like 10 o'clock at night. And I was like, dude, this thing looks perfect. Let's lock it up. I'll be there tomorrow morning, blah, 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 blah. We go out there, and this thing, because the thing about those 4.0s, those straight sixes, is that they're supposed to run forever. Like, it's completely routine to find one of these Jeeps on it with like 300,000 miles. Original bottom end, like no top end work having been done. I mean, those trucks are either bulletproof or they break the second you sit in them.
Yeah.
And I got into this truck. Everything sounded perfect. I took it for a test drive, four high, four low. Everything was golden. But I saw that the oil gauge was a little low. And now I also had done enough research to know that the oil gauges on these things are very finicky. They're never accurate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, there's no way this thing, like, the guy had records for every single piece of work that had been done on this truck. So I was like, okay, there's no way the motor's blown on this thing. Like, obviously the dude who owned it really cared a lot about it. So, you know, I'll buy it on good faith. The motor sounds great. Like, I can, you know, I've spent enough time in garages to know what a beat motor sounds like.
Yeah.
And I shit you not, it's like a ticking time bomb. It sounds like a diesel truck when I started up. I'm like, how did this happen? You know what I mean? And the problem is, like, as somebody who's also wheeled and dealed myself with, like, cars and motorcycles and stuff, I'm not going to sit here and get angry at somebody for trying to dump it on somebody. Like, that's kind of part of the game.
Yeah, you know? It is part
like,
of the game.
I can't sit here with a straight face and say that I've never sold some drunk to somebody. Yeah. So you just kind of accept it for when it happens. But, like, damn, dude, I waited for months for, like, the ideal Jeep. I was so stoked to have it. I was going to put, like, a little 3-inch lift on it. You know what I mean? Like, run over some fire hydrants or whatever the fuck Jeep guys do. And just... I haven't been able to catch a break with this thing since I got it. No shit, like $400 a month.
How many miles when you found it?
167,000. I was like, okay, this thing is like, in Jeep years, that's a fucking baby.
That's
like
mint. A toddler in Jeep years. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it hasn't even had sex for the first time yet. It's like a 12-year-old boy. I was like, I'm gonna turn this thing into a fucking man. And next thing I know, I'm like, oh, no, it's on its way out. Like, and the worst part is I took it to my mechanic. Like, I have a shop down here in Philly that I really like. And the guy goes, dude, to be honest with you, I would just drive it. Like, I wouldn't worry about it. The problem with these trucks is that even in this condition, this thing will still run for another 40,000 miles. He was like, it could either blow up on you on the way home or just keep trucking forever. He was like, I would call your insurance, get roadside put on, and call it a day. And that's honestly what I've been doing. But also, like, again, it's like living with somebody that you've married that you don't really like that much. And you're like, fuck, like, yeah. Listen, this is fine. Like, this is a fine living arrangement, I suppose. But, like, if you could find somebody else, I wouldn't even be upset. I'd be like, oh, shucks.
Yeah, it's a bummer because you've described pretty much perfectly what I've been driving around. And it is one of those things where it's like, if you leave it alone, it's a roll of the dice. The goddamn thing will either run forever or you'll dump all this money into it, fix it, and it doesn't matter because everything will be fine except for the one thing that you didn't see coming, and that's what'll blow.
Yeah, or like the world, like, listen, and when stuff on these things breaks, it's super cheap. You know what I mean? I wasn't worried about that. I was like, okay, so parts are never going to get too extravagant for this thing. But it's literally the one end of the car. Like, even on the top end, like, hey, man, my rocker arms are shot out. I got to replace that stuff. I've got to replace some bushing and stuff there, whatever. I can do that. That's fine. But I've got to take the motor out of this thing. I've got to go into the bottom end. It's going to need a fucking crank. And I'm good on all that. I'm 28 years old. I work, like, 10 jobs. If I can just have a car that runs and has four-wheel drive and does donuts, that's it.
That'll be good enough. And something that's just a little bit more fun in the snow.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, listen, when I joked on Instagram about doing the donuts in the street, some kid from Canada, from Manitoba, He wound up DMing me, and he's like, well, I know firsthand those trucks aren't powerful enough to do donuts in four-wheel drive. And I was like, well, Chad, you don't know shit. I'm all over Girard Avenue.
Fuck you, Chad.
Yeah, somehow I'm getting my masculinity challenged in this fucking thing. Like, God. Just take it from me.
That's the problem, is you've got like 17,000 followers. So once you reach a certain amount of people, you're kind of immune to normal etiquette, normal behavior from people. I don't know what the number is. It's probably once you have a K in front of your followers, that K means like, okay, it's fine to talk to this dude however the fuck I want.
Listen, to be completely honest with you, I would say that I actually was just talking to a friend tonight, and she was telling me that she's been staying off social media because it's just become this exceptionally toxic place for her, and it's not good for her mental health. And my whole thing has always been like, hey, man, social media is definitely really shitty. Like, it's definitely one of those places that needs a lot of work, and we're probably going to have to do some evolving over the next few years with it. But at the same time, you know, we're all autonomous individuals. It's as toxic or as fruitful as you want it to be. And luckily on my Instagram, I think people know that, like, I'm not some celebrity. Like, it's so weird when you talk to people and they're like, dude, I can't believe you answered my DM. I'm like, dude, I'm sitting in a third bedroom office in a row home in Philadelphia right now. I have no idea what kind of life you think I'm living out here. But anyway, people haven't been that toxic to me, man. I think I've only, in the 3 or 4 years I've been on Instagram, you know, doing my thing, I think I've only had like 3 people reach out specifically like to troll. And to be honest with you, each time it's been one of those things where it's like, wow, I guess I really am going somewhere. Look at that. I don't quantify popularity by like follower count. I quantify it by how many kids from like Manitoba are talking shit about me.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? How many people are aware of you? How many people are bringing you up in their daily conversation? I think that's a good measure of whether or not you're doing, you know, there's this idea that if you are not polarizing, then you won't be successful. And your Instagram is kind of the opposite of that, because all you're doing is, you know, predominantly you're posting beautiful pictures, and that is enough to merit you the followers that you have, because you know, you care about your work, your images are cool, and they're interesting to look at. You take the time to write an interesting caption for all these things. So it's kind of nice to see something that is, no, you don't have to be polarizing. I don't want to be polarizing because if I'm totally honest, most of my opinions are kind of like, eh, well, you know, it's a gray area and it's not really yes, but it's not really no either. You know, some things are just kind of in the middle, and that's not a popular opinion if you want to be a topic of conversation, which becomes this kind of weird game.
I mean, I think I'm in a very unique position because, you know, I'm from New Jersey, so I'm naturally just a cynical human being, you know, straight from the get-go. So on Facebook with my friends and family, like people who understand my political dispositions and understand where I'm coming from and grew up with me, that's really where I voice like all of my toxic shit. Like that's really where I go to vent about goofy things that happen throughout the day. And on Instagram, it's one of those things where like, you know, the whole reason why my Instagram started was when my dad passed away, I got super quiet. And it, you know, you go through the normal grieving process, you're sad, obviously. And my dad and I were super tight, you know, before he passed away. And I knew that my friends were starting to kind of worry about me. So I started my Instagram as, you know, kind of like a diary type of thing. And the funny thing is, like, you know, we were all such fucking tough guys in, you know, high school or middle school that for me, it became this kind of outlet. Like it became a specific resource to vent how I was feeling. So the thing for me has always been, I don't really care if I have 1,000 followers, 100 followers, or 100,000 followers. This is a lot, like this is for me. You know, and it wasn't up until the past like year and a half that you would have people reach out and be like, you know, like, hey, I mean, dude, I've never written a book, and I've had people tell me I'm their favorite writer. You know what I mean? Like I've had kids who have been dealing with depression in Edinburgh, Scotland, DM me and be like, you know, listen, man, I want you to know that I've never had a strong father figure and that I hang on every word that you write, because it makes me feel more normal about what I go through as an adolescent, you know, as somebody who's turning into a man. And then you start to understand that, again, social media is as toxic as you want it to be, or it can be helpful, or it could be a place to learn and nurture. And I think that's kind of the headspace that I'm in when I post anything on Instagram. You know, so it's one of those things where it's like, I'm not necessarily an ideal human being, you know, but the idea is that because I speak so openly about these experiences, about these things that I go through, I think that they hit with people. And I think that that's also kind of a deterrent. Like no one wants to be a shitbag to the nice guy. You know what I mean? And on Instagram, it's just for me, it's about being positive, or about accepting life when things are negative. You know what I mean? It's about just being open and honest. And I think that people can see that and respect it. You know, it's like when you go into like an ancient artifact, it's like when, you know, when you're touring some country, you don't want to go there and shit all over anybody. It's not our natural inclination to be that way. So I think that, you know, so long as that's the kind of space that you're creating, people are going to naturally follow suit with that. And I think that's been a big thing about my Instagram in particular. Now, don't get me wrong, I do nothing but look at memes on the internet. Like all, it's like 90% of my job at this point is just like looking at other people's shit posting and like laughing or cringing at like how gnarly these jokes get. But for me, it's one of those things where like, you know, I'm not bad, but like, you know, I'm from fucking New Jersey. I was raised in a ghetto neighborhood in New Jersey. You know what I mean? So my humor is usually off kilter. Like my opinions are sometimes, you know, inappropriate. I mean, it's one of those things where you just learn and grow and accept it. But Instagram is one of those places where I kind of try and keep things on the straight and narrow.
It is interesting because I think right now we're in this position where we have so much to take in. There's so much media. There's so many different avenues of input. And I think the vast majority of them have an agenda. The agenda is to stir the shit and create an opinion one way or the other. And I think what's missing, I shouldn't say what's missing, because I know a lot of people are filling this need, but I think there's more of a demand for honesty. It's if you backpedal a little bit to the real height of reality television.
Mm-hmm.
That was this weird agreement that we all silently made to ignore the fact that this was as far from reality as you could be. You know, these kind of Jersey Shore shows or whatever it was, the reality shows with the fabricated altercations and the, you know, the fabricated drama where it was all just to, you know, get you to tune in and get you to have an opinion one way or the other. And I think what we really want is people that are just honest, whatever it is. It doesn't matter if it's not a popular opinion or if it's not an exciting opinion, people that are actually being themselves. And I think the reason that that's come into focus recently, especially with what I do with podcasts, what my goal is to kind of bring back conversations, because I don't think many people are having conversations right now, or at least not real conversations. We have these little interactions online where we kind of have an opportunity very quickly to say some inflammatory thing or voice our opinion on something, but it's without the subtle nuances and nomenclatures of a normal conversation, which you would have with someone face to face. And we're so far from that. It's like we're more social than ever in a lot of ways, but completely unsocial.
I mean, I think so. I think that there are a few things that contribute to that. For instance, you know, you're right with the rise of reality TV culture and making that a part of our everyday lives. We've also kind of commoditized the media. So, for instance, people used to subscribe to newspapers, and it gave those media institutions a certain level of power. You know, they had subscribers. Those were the people that they were beholden to. We live in an age where all of our media is free. And we're the kind of people who will groan when we hit some kind of paywall to read some kind of New York Times article. And the problem with that is that these people are businesses. You know, they have to find other ways to make their business profitable. So now what winds up happening is you've got all these people trying to pay for or trying to garner clicks. You know, the New York Times doesn't live unless its advertisers keep spending money there. Its advertisers aren't going to keep spending money there if the news that they're reporting is fucking boring. So they take every opportunity they can to report on whatever they think might be interesting in ways people might find them interesting. And I mean, it's not even necessarily a new practice. Like when I was in journalism school, it was one of those things where one of the main mantras was, if it bleeds, it leads. You know, when you're gauging the importance of a news story, there's a certain hierarchy. And the most exciting stuff is always the stuff that gets published first. And then if it's somebody of notability or notoriety, they get published. And if it's like, you know, a happy-go-lucky story, like of a, you know, a school kid with cancer whose friends raise money, that usually gets hiked right down to the bottom of the list because it's just kind of a feel-good story. So essentially we built this institution on those principles, and then we exacerbated those problems further by making everything they do based around getting clicks. So it's created this particularly toxic environment. And the problem is that, you know, one of the points that you mentioned before is that people want honesty and they want to have discourse, but I found the exact opposite. I think that we're all living in these kind of echo chambers where we don't realize just how, oh man, the only word that I can think of, honestly, is awful we are to each other. You know what I mean? Like, I think the reason why my friends and family are so interested in my thoughts politically, that, like, you know, that I don't necessarily display on Instagram, is because I'm that person. Like, I've become my time in hard news. I spent 6 years in hard news before I sold out and went into marketing or my magazine writing. And in those years, it taught me nothing more than to be a particularly judicious media consumer. So I don't believe what I read in a newspaper. I don't believe any of that. I don't have a favorite news website. I go to all of them. And then I read every story I can find on something that interests me. And then I formulate my own opinion. The problem is nobody has time for that shit anymore. And at the same time, because we live in this world where we get everything we want right now, where everything is me, 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 you get to a certain point where all you care about is gravitating toward people who feel the same way as you. And it was a safe place to be 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but now all it's doing is hurting us. And so like for me, I'm not, like I said, I think that we're going to have to do some serious evolving over the next, you know, few years with our social media, with the way that we consume regular media or news. And we're just not there yet. And so that's why it's for me, again, it all goes back to, you know, why I post the way that I do on Instagram. For me, I'd rather not get burdened with that kind of shit, man. I don't go on there to incite violence or make people feel bad. The idea for me is it's just a sounding board for, you know, the things that I'm dealing with, how I'm feeling, what I'm going through. And if it stopped being that way, like, dude, I don't give a fuck how many followers I'd have. I'd just stop. I'd be like, I'm good. I don't need any of that.
You kind of touched on it there for a second, and I think you're absolutely right, is that we don't have the time to sift through, because I think generally you could do something of the sort like you described, which is follow a story from one news source to the other to another and read as many different articles on the story as you can. And based off of kind of data pooling, you could come up with your own determination. But even if you did that for one story, how long would you have spent doing that for that one story? And the idea that you could do it for several topics it's not possible.
Oh, brother, listen, being intelligent is a very time consuming process. Mm. You know what I mean? Like that's really the answer to that. It's like, well, fuck, man, you know, would you rather be stupid or smart? And if you're going to be dumb, at least shut up about it, you know? And I think that's kind of where I kind of turn off with people. It's like, okay, well, everyone's allowed to have their opinions, you know, opinions are like assholes or whatever. But my problem is that when the way that you feel or when you kind of act that your opinions are somehow more justified or more worthy than somebody else's opinions, I think that's when we start hitting a very dangerous place. And to be honest with you, I think over the last few years, that's really what we started to see with social media. And like I said, I see it getting worse before it gets better. You know, just from my personal observations, like I see it getting a lot worse before it gets better because I think people are so comfortable with incivility right now. Like we are stoked to see other people feel bad for the way that they feel.
Oh, yeah.
And the worst part is we mask that kind of comfort in this whole like, well, obviously I'm right. Well, obviously I'm right. I can't be wrong because this is common sense. So if you feel different from how I feel, you know, you're obviously the problem. And I think that that's no way to get anywhere with anybody ever. And I'm not just talking about news media. I'm talking about just everyday life. You know, we know, and it's the weird part is like, we know that we can't act like this. It's not this like intrinsic part of our human existence to be jerk offs to each other. And yet here we are. You know, I don't know whether it's that like anonymity or safety that the internet provides us or what. Like, I don't know if it's something that we're just seeing the side effects, like the byproducts of 15 years of typing behind computer screens, but it's a cold world out there, dude, you know? And my whole thing is I'd rather not be one of those people. You know what I mean? Like I said, when you have people who will reach out to you, who don't need to, who don't know you, like for my friends and family to say, hey man, you know, that fucking post that you made me feel things. They, you know, they're my friends and family, but for just some random stranger from some random country in the world to reach out and be like, hey, you know, what you said about this really touched me. And I want to thank you for being that kind of person. Why wouldn't you want to be that kind of person to people? Why would you want to be like the Adolf Hitler of Instagram? I don't understand that mindset.
You said it before, that old mantra of if it bleeds, it leads. You know, there's kind of this mixture of the lack of time that we talked about and also that knee-jerk reaction that people seem to have right now where they want to watch someone suffer who they think is wrong for whatever it is they said or did. And I think a mixture of those two things gave birth to this clickbait culture. And as a journalist, I just am curious how you feel as far as journalistic integrity goes when you see these articles that obviously have inflammatory headlines are nothing new, but some of them are so blatantly misleading and also so poorly constructed, but will oftentimes be the marker from which people form their opinions without even reading that article. It's almost like that article wasn't designed to be read. It was just that inflammatory clickbait title.
Yeah, or like the worst part is you'll read a headline that says one thing and then you read the article and you're like, oh, that's not that bad at all. Like what?
That happens all the time.
The problem is it gets even worse when you understand that these news media organizations, especially the popular ones, have entire lines of people that go through this copy, that go through these stories before they get posted. So you don't just have some kid with an agenda typing away on his blog. You have an entire team of editors, of writers, of copy editors that go through every single detail of these stories to make sure that they're accurate or to make sure that they accurately reflect the opinion of that particular media organization. Once you start realizing things like that, you understand just how bad things are. And you're like, oh man, like at some point or another, we're going to have to step back from this and realize that like all it's doing is stressing us out and it's taking years off our lives. Like it's no way to live. And the problem is, like I said, I think right now people are so excited to be standing on one. So the way that I describe politics to people, or the way that I see it, and again, straight white male, I view things from a particular aspect of privilege.
You're not allowed to have an opinion.
Usually looking down from the outside at the way things run in this country, or from looking down from the outside, you know, by the entire process. You get to watch this entire spectrum of people. And the way that I describe it is what I'm seeing right now is you've got two groups of people standing on either side of an enormous canyon, this big black abyss. And they're both yelling at each other. Both of these groups are yelling feverishly at one another. And the canyon is so far apart that these screams are just falling into the abyss. These sound waves can't travel to one side or the other, but it doesn't stop them from yelling. And these people on both sides are so fucking eager to talk and not listen that they keep pushing people into the crevice, like into this canyon, into this abyss. And they know what they're doing, and they know that they can't hear shit. They might even know that the other side can't hear them, but they're just all so eager to talk and yell and be heard that they're ultimately going to end up with nobody on either side. And I think that's and I think that right now the media is used as a tool to kind of exacerbate those issues. And the problem is there are so many very real things happening in this world that we should be concerned about, you know, that should have us in an uproar. But the problem is the way that we go about voicing our perspectives or expressing our feelings, it's completely counterintuitive to what we really need, you know. And for me, I don't think, you know, listen, like I would love to get to a point where I can, you know, I could leverage some kind of social clout or whatever the fuck people think I have to help people kind of have more civil discourse with one another over these political issues. But now definitely isn't the time. I'm good just posting pictures and writing about my feelings. Like nobody needs that kind of stress.
It's almost like the ability to communicate around the world came so quickly. It was like opening the door on a chicken coop and all the chickens suddenly stuck their heads in the air and went all simultaneously, all at once. And it's going to take some time for everything to kind of calm down and for people to realize that you don't all have to talk at once. And that we're not really having conversations. We're talking at each other, not to each other. It's very strange that we have this opportunity to, you know, something clicked recently when I started this podcast, which was, holy shit, I've had the internet for all this time. And I've never, if you asked me, wow, isn't it really interesting to be able to have, you know, deep, nuanced conversations with people from all walks of life, I'd go, oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's great. But then there's another part of my brain that goes, well, why the fuck aren't you doing that? You have this ability for the first time in the history of the human race to be able to communicate with anybody that is willing to communicate with you with, you know, in this particular format, no real boundary. There's no boundary here. There's no there's no, you know, time limit. There's no agenda or anything like that. You know what I mean? And it's just very strange that more people aren't. It's a shame that it's more attractive to talk at than it is to talk to at this particular moment in history.
I agree. And I think that's also kind of the funniest thing is, you know, we live under this perspective that the internet has been such a liberating experience in human history. But to be honest with you, I think all it did was kind of exacerbate, you know, our mental health issues. It made us far more politically divisive than we're normally accustomed to. I would like to say that we've done a good job utilizing the internet for what it's worth, but the truth is I think we barely scratched the surface of how great it could be and how shitty it can be. You know what I mean? And I think for me, you know, as most things in life, you know, this is all a swinging pendulum. You know, like you said, I think that right now we've got all this stuff happening at once that the pendulum is so far swung off kilter that things are just kind of crazy, that they're uncertain, that we don't know what's happening, and you kind of just have to even out. And you're going to come back to this center at some point, and you're just going to start swinging back to another side. You know what I mean? And I think the problem is that people don't understand that, you know, life is physics. You know what I mean? Every reaction has an equal and opposite reaction. And the problem is that either we acknowledge it and just don't care, or we're so ignorant that we can't even fathom the fact that all these things that we do in our everyday lives have repercussions. So for me, it's become one of those things where, like, I've never been a big religious person. You know, I'd like to think that when it's all over, like, I get to see my dad again. But the truth is, for me, I don't even fucking care. You be a good person today because that's the right thing to do. You know, you don't be a loudmouth on the internet about shit you don't know about. You don't purposely try and go out here and hurt people's feelings. You know, you don't post malicious bullshit because it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean? Let's put it this way. If you are a person that I don't agree with, I think that I'm personally more inclined to seek out why you feel the way that you feel as opposed to just immediately writing you off. And I think that we live in this climate where we can find so many people who immediately agree with us that it makes writing people off so much easier. But the problem is we don't understand that the consequences of being that kind of person does nothing more than compound these issues. It does nothing more than make people more angry or make people on the other side more upset, as opposed to, you know, trying to bridge gap. Like I said, we've got all of this potential to use this shit for such good, and we just don't. You know what I mean? It's unbelievable. Like I said, it goes back to, you know, people in Philly. I just last night I had some kid who works at some bar that I love going to down here because they've got the best martinis in town. Fucking, he hits me up and he goes, "Hey man, thanks for not being a dick on Instagram." Huh. And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He goes, "Well, you know, all these snobby, snooty fucking somebody photographers, I've been doing this for a year and I can't get these guys to answer my DMs with like just basic questions about how to use my camera and stuff like that." That to me is just so how is this the climate that we're living in? Or like I watched some other kid, he did like this Reddit AMA, some kid from Philly, he's a photographer out here. He had a Reddit AMA somewhere and somebody was asking questions and this fucking little shit snot-nosed kid had the nerve to tell somebody to go call his agent and ask them if they want to know the answer to this question. I was like, fuck, like how is this the climate that we're living in? You know what I mean? Like, listen, again, I think I'm super stoked that I've been able to get as far as I have. I'm very humbled and grateful for the opportunity to do the things that I do and be able to interact with the people that I do. But I think the problem is that so many people so many people just take this shit for granted. You know what I mean? Like we think that because you've got however many followers, somebody owes you something. And the whole concept of that is like, what would you do if Instagram deleted itself? Like, what would you do if Instagram went the way of Vine tomorrow? That's no way to live. It's no way to conduct yourself. It's no way to handle yourself. You know, the whole thing is fucked up. And I didn't, like I said, I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better because we enable these people, like, you know. But, like, you know, there was another kid who was accused of being a rapist, and not just by, like, one or two girls, but I mean, like, they made an entire Instagram account talking shit about this kid. And there are still tens of thousands of people who are like, wow, man, I really love your stuff. Oh, my God, you're so – it's like I – What are we doing? I don't understand how this is like. How is this how we're using social media? You know what I mean?
Yeah, the level of connectivity is impressive, and yet we still manage to kind of move throughout this
experience. Be impressively disconnected.
Yeah, and you mentioned it before how people kind of just seek out folks who have. Already have their ideas as well, the same, you know, interests or the same political views or what have you. And I think there's a huge issue with that that people don't realize. It sounds nice on the surface, is like find people who share your interests and that way you can develop community and things like that. But I think there's a fundamental mistake in doing that and only that. And that mistake is that before you know it, you end up existing in this sort of echo chamber where your ideas never get tested and you're never introduced to ideas that might be the contrary to yours, but also might have validity to them. And so you end up just kind of becoming stagnant. And should your ideas be shit ones, well, now you're just sitting in a room with a bunch of people patting each other on the back about how great your shit ideas are. And it's weird that we've been able to pull that move off in an era where we, like I keep going back to, have all this connectivity at our fingertips to go and test our ideas. You can go and any theory that you have, any idea that you have, you can go and put it to the test. Go, yeah. Go have a conversation with someone, have a sort of a debate and see whether or not your idea holds its weight. And then mm-hmm. if it doesn't, we'll just go ahead and drop that and move on. But we're not doing that. Modify
your behavior. I mean, the thing is, you know, I don't mind, you know, I think everybody goes through those periods in their lives where they feel stagnant. You know what I mean? Like, I've gone through it professionally, I've gone through it personally, I've gone through it romantically, I've gone through it physically, where you're just not feeling like you're going anywhere, you're doing anything. And I think that feeling like that, even momentarily, is a lot. I think being hungry for a second is better than false thriving, which is what winds up happening when you do kind of engulf yourself in these echo chambers where, like, people are hyping up your bullshit predispositions about, I don't know, fashion, music, politics. It's all of these things that keep happening, and you're like, oh my God, somebody somewhere have, you know, say something different. Talk about something different.
Yeah.
If you're hanging in and I think that's the big thing is, like, in my personal life, I have friends from all walks of life. And I think that's super important. Like, my Facebook is fucking crazy. And sometimes I'll say things on Facebook just to stir up the pot and see what boils out. You know what I mean? And because I've got friends from literally everywhere. And I think that's the, even though it's volatile, like, it's a volatile environment, obviously, people don't know how to speak to one another, I also think it's some of the most fruitful stuff I've ever seen. You know what I mean? And yeah. I think that's kind of the importance of everything, is that once you start getting to a point where you won't tolerate somebody else's point of view, even if those are particularly shitty perspectives to have, all you're doing is making it worse for everybody. You're making it worse on yourself. You're making it worse for them, and you're making it worse for every single person in both of your lives. You know, and like I said, I think that's the biggest problem that we're dealing with in social media, like, you know, in this digital age.
What is also interesting at the same time is that as kind of, I don't know how to put it, it's almost like the lack of manners or the lack of humanity. Humanity is a strong word, but it is kind of the lack of decency that people
empathy.
Yeah, there we go. That's the word I was looking for. People seem entirely unempathetic online, on social media, until you kind of reach out to them on an individual basis. If you catch people in the comment section where it's clear that the theme of the comment section is shitting on this particular thing, then people kind of feel like it's open season until you reach out to these people on an individual level. I had an experience that I'm sure my listeners are tired of hearing about because I've beaten it to death, but every once in a while I'll throw this Hail Mary because to me, being a podcaster is not about getting noticed by, there's kind of this divisiveness or between podcasters where I notice on one side of the fence, people are just trying to get noticed by someone to get big, which is nice. It's nice to be noticed and it's nice to get recognition. And maybe somebody, you know, there's that idea that all it takes is the right person to notice your show when you get big. And then on the other side of it, it's where I know I waver from time to time. Sometimes I like to be noticed too. I'm only human, but I think predominantly what I try to do is talk to interesting people so that the fans that I do have get to hear from interesting people. That's my goal is to create a halfway decent show that if someone's listening, they might, you know, hear something that sticks with them. And,
well, Dave, you fucked up by having me on here.
I know. Well, I didn't want to say it. I'm glad you did. So what I end up doing every once in a while is I'll throw this Hail Mary to see if some big name will say yes. And one time I did that and I thought I understood this person's sense of humor. And I think in a lot of regards, I did. I think that, you know, the joke just missed the mark. But I thought that he's so famous, his DMs are probably filled with shit. Let me try to be funny. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I'm funny enough, I'll at least get some sort of notice from it. Which, yeah, it kind of happened like that. But the only thing was, what I tried to do was come off really arrogant, but in a satirical way that I thought was very obvious, you know. So I said things like, you know, I'm what you would call a person of influence, and your career would greatly benefit from an interaction with me, and yada, yada, yada. But it was obvious because at the time I had 200 followers, and this person's got thousands and thousands of followers. And I thought for sure it was obvious. But I forget that in the internet, there's a whole lot of psychos. You just don't know if I'm one of those psychos. So it was so well constructed, I'll still give myself a pat on the back for that, that he bought it entirely. He thought it was real. He then posted it, and it was suddenly at the mercy of 8,000 people. And man, I was torn apart. I'm talking people saying scary things to me. And dude, it's the threats of violence from people are a bizarre thing. Because it's, I thought we moved past I learned a long time ago playing like Halo that like, oh, it's kind of cheesy to threaten people with violence over the internet because you're never going to do anything. Like, you're not, don't be silly. But no, that's definitely still fresh and still alive. So, but what I did was I've got 8,000 some odd eyes on this and I've got 1,200 comments of people just viciously attacking me. So I decide that this is an opportunity for me to potentially change some minds. Which was, I think, in hindsight, the right move. Because when you're small, kind of small potatoes like my show is, you know, you, if there's an opportunity somewhere, you're kind of foolish not to do something about it. And so what I start to do is I don't fight anybody. That's a silly move. Don't try to argue with anybody. So I kind of hit some of the more aggressive people with kind of self-deprecating humor. And that wins some of them over. And then there's people that are kind of keen to the idea that this was a joke. And I would slide in and kind of reassure them, like, it is in fact a joke. It just wasn't a good one. And my point is that so many people reached out to me and said, wow, I'm sorry for the things that I said. I feel like a complete douchebag now. Oh my God. Yeah. It was very surprising.
This was on Twitter, you said?
I'm sorry.
This was on Twitter.
This was on Instagram.
Oh, Instagram. Okay. Yeah. And dude, that's also the very interesting thing about the nuance of social media interaction is that on when you said, I thought you said Twitter, and I was like, there's no fucking way this happened on Twitter. Like, people are just straight up trash. I don't know why, but people are like a bag of flaming hot Cheetos that some college kids threw up into and then smoked the jewel into on Twitter. People on Instagram have some semblance of, I think that it's because, so when you write, like when all you do is write things, like if you write like 140 character fucking taglines on Twitter all day, for whatever reason, even that still provides some level of anonymity. I could have your fucking phone number and physical home address, and you're still a stranger on the internet. On Instagram, everything is much more human. I think it's because you take these in-depth looks into people's lives or the way that they think or the things that they do that, like, suddenly it makes things very – I've had some really, really good conversations and interactions. I have some people who live in other countries that I've never met, will probably never meet, and still care about on an emotional level where you're just like, man, I really fucking hope this person is doing okay. Like, I really don't want to be a jerk to this guy or blah, blah, blah.
I'm sorry, continue. That really was kind of the gist of it, was just that from that, I learned that it was my suspicion that most people are decent and that as long as you don't fight fire with fire I didn't really take it personally, but an interesting thing did happen, which was, this is my first time dealing with that level of mass hate. And as much as I would laugh at some of the hilarious things that people were saying, which, you know, I'm not going to lie, a lot of the shit that they were saying was really funny. I would find myself nauseous, which I'm a pretty level-headed guy. And I know that internet hate is not a great measure of people's actual feelings towards you. It's this kind of superficial shallowness, and they don't really know you. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I know all those things. I'm very aware of those things. And I even know not to really read the comments if something big happens. It's just that I saw it as an opportunity. And even after I had done my due diligence, spoke my piece, and in the end was blocked by the person who reposted this because I went on a responding spree like a complete psychopath. And eventually they were just like, I can't handle this shit anymore. But when it was all said and done, I felt absolutely terrible, like gut-wrenchingly. I couldn't shake it. I couldn't get it off my mind, even though I had had all of those positive interactions. I'm telling you, if I reached out and had conversations with 30 people, 25 of them were sweethearts and five of them stuck to their guns. But the more you read what they were typing, the more you went, oh, you're just fucking broken. There's just something wrong with you. But the ones who were level-headed, my biggest fear was just not having people not realize that it was a joke. That was the bummer about it. You know what I mean? If I have an opinion and they don't like the opinion, that's one thing. But if it just missed the mark,
Or like completely misrepresents your actual intentions. Yeah, well, and I think that's kind of the reason why I, you know, keep my fucking mouth quiet. That's the worst part about all of this, is that, you know, you just start to understand that people aren't as perceptive as we think they are. And you also start to understand that things may not appear as obvious to some as they do to you because there aren't things like body language or eye contact, you know, on the internet.
Yeah.
And so, for instance, I have, just falling at the mercy of commenters, I wrote, till this day, I think it's the most viral story that's ever been published on a website called mademan.com. And I wound up running into the managing editor at a Harley-Davidson party in Milwaukee like 2 months ago. I mean, completely randomly, we were both in the same bar getting tattooed or whatever. And he walks up and he goes, dude, so you're the guy that wrote that fucking story. And it was a story about how no good man should wear cargo pants. And the thing was that this fucking website, they would pay me money to write like 500 or 600 word blurbs every day about just opinions. Like I would wake up feeling a certain fucking way and be like, I'm going to write about this today. Like, I wrote one particularly vulgar post about martinis and how, you know, this is the only way you should ever order a martini or whatever. And then that did very well. People were very hateful about that. But there was – I wrote an article for Vice about the Ku Klux Klan. In fact, I wrote like a series of articles for Vice about the KKK. And no one responded with fucking half like the animosity that people who wore like are really down for cargo shorts did in the article. And I'm not like – I woke up and I had friends – hitting me up on Facebook being like, holy shit, dude, what is happening? Like, what's going on? There were over like 200 something comments on the story of people just freaking the fuck out over my comments on why cargo pants have too many fucking pockets. And it was to me, I'm sitting here like, whoa, it's a fucking Tuesday. Like, it's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. I'm just like, wow, I haven't even had coffee yet. This is kind of unbelievable, but also like, spectacular in the way that house fires can be spectacular and just be like, wow, this is visually stunning, but also like that's a fucking dumpster fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yep.
And so I had one, and people were posting screenshots of my Instagram, of my Twitter, being like, this is the guy saying we shouldn't wear cargo shorts.
That's,
and
I was like, fucking hilarious.
Oh, dude, God. It was so nice. So I had one kid, I don't know anything about this guy. I know that he was from Arizona, and he was really going into me. And my whole thing is, listen, you know, part of the rules of what we do is you don't jump in the comment section. Like, it's very unorthodox, if not unethical, for a writer to hop into a comment section on some article that some publisher posts on their social or on the article itself and just start throwing mud at motherfuckers. Like, that, we don't do that stuff. You know what I mean? So, like, you can read the hate and be enamored and horrified by it, but you can't really, it's a faux pas to jump in on it. I had some dude actually start harassing me on Twitter, and that was where the fucking gloves came off. I was like, oh yes, I was waiting for one of you fucking neckbeards to come on here and start talking. Like, because the thing is, like, listen, man, I'm a photographer, like a writer, I'll talk about my feelings, but I'm also a piece of shit kid from New Jersey. I'll smack the shit. And like, listen, my whole thing is like, I also don't like bullies. I've got a very weird thing about bullies. At 28 years old, there are very few things that you can say or do to me that we can't reconcile. But if I fucking catch you bullying somebody else or being a jerk to somebody unnecessarily, you bet the New Jersey hood rat comes right out of my body. Like, it's like, it's like I died and my soul is leaving and fucking attacking you for the jerk that you are. So this kid hits me up on Twitter. This probably a fucking grown man from his mom's basement hits me up on Twitter. And he's just digging in on me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this into a lesson about bullying on the internet. And I chased this dude. And I was like, listen, man, I hear everything you're saying. It's all bullshit, but I hear it. And rather than like continue this discourse on the internet, I found a publisher and they're going to pay me to come fly and see you wherever you live. And I want you to, I don't know anything about you. You know what I look like. You know where I live. You know how I feel about cargo shorts. Like, we're basically fucking family on your end at this point. You pick a gym, pick anywhere you want. And I will fucking show up there and let you say this shit to me in a ring with gloves on. And I was like, this is what you wanted. Like, he was threatening to kill me. He was saying I should have never been born and all this crazy shit. And like, listen, man, I have got the thickest skin. I wouldn't have made it out of my neighborhood if you didn't have thick skin. You know what I mean? Like, I'm all about that. Like, if you want to talk shit, let's stand and bang. I'm all about it. And I was like, listen, man, I'm not even kidding. And he tried to pull this thing like, oh, well, you couldn't pay me enough to do that.
Oh,
blah,
yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. I'm rich, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, okay.
So what I did was I went onto Facebook and had some of my really, like, I have, and the cool thing about having friends all over the place is I've got some really fucking low homies in some really high places. So I was like, guys, I've got some dudes saying that I couldn't afford for him to come out and fight me. So what kind of side betting action would you guys be interested in doing? And they were like, oh, what does the dude look like? And I was like, I don't know anything about him. And they were like, okay, fine, fuck it. I'm not kidding. In the span of 3 hours, we had $10,000. I had dudes willing to put up $10,000 to have me go fight some fucking random hillbilly from like Arizona who I didn't know. And I could not wait. I was like, listen, man, these are the repercussions. Like, the internet should have very real repercussions.
Yeah.
And at the very least, if you're afraid to realize your terrible behavior, you should at least understand the potential consequences of it.
Oh, my God.
I said, okay, dude, honestly, at this point, name your price. How much would you want for me to come fight you? Because I've got dudes who are willing to spend a lot of money and bet that I come out there and fuck you up. And it wound up becoming this whole thing. And it got so bad that this person wound up deleting their Twitter. Because he realized I wasn't joking. Dude, I found a publisher. They were setting me up with all the legal stuff. They were trying to give me all the paperwork, being like, yeah, dude, you've got to have him sign this, this, and this. Like, he's got to sign a waiver. Like, he's got to sign something for our lawyers.
Yeah.
And like, I had dudes side betting on everything. And when this kid realized, I was very serious. Listen, I'm a freelance writer. I could work from anywhere in the world. I do it all the time. If you think I won't come out to your bumblefuck town in Arizona and beat you senseless and still make my deadlines for the day, you are fucking wrong.
So
this kid, he like disappeared from Twitter. And at the same time, like, so on one aspect, on one end of the spectrum, I'm like, okay, so obviously I bullied this guy. Like, I bullied him so fucking much and so badly that I made him delete his Twitter. But on the opposite end of that spectrum, you understand that this kid was a bully. He was not a nice human being. You know what I mean? He's one of those like very purposely toxic people. And listen, man, when we first started speaking, I was willing to engage in discourse with him and talk to him about what was going on. But when he was just incessantly like all about this kill yourself, you know, fuck your mom, blah, blah, I was like, okay, well, I will literally pay thousands of dollars. Like, I have friends who will pay thousands of dollars to have you say that to my actual face. And it was one of those things where, again, I don't, you know, I'm too old to be on the tough guy shit. Like, nobody wants to do that purposely. But at the same time, I have no remorse over it. I hope that kid's still on Twitter. I hope he's rethinking the way that he interacts with people. I hope he's reading some fucking books. Maybe he's doing some drugs that make him calmer. I don't know. But I hope he's a better person because of the ass kicking he knew he was very, like, very literally going to get.
It is very ridiculous that people act the way they do because of anonymity or the lack of repercussions. And I do wonder when that's going to taper off. And
bro, because I said the pockets on his pants were, or because he, I said he had too many pockets on his pants, and because his like his knees, like, you shouldn't wear shorts with knees below the, or with that hang below your knee. He fucking flipped out. And I was like, well, man, you know, I don't really know what to tell you. If your life is really that fucked up, that like somebody talking shit on your favorite pair of shorts is gonna completely unravel you, then, you know, pick up knitting or build a car or something, because it was just so unbelievable to me.
Well, on a side note,
from everywhere,
you are completely correct. Cargo pants have no place in the world outside of maybe a shop.
Jesus was a fucking carpenter, and even Jesus didn't wear cargo pants. Get the fuck out of my face. That guy was walking around building roofs in underwear.
Nobody needs that many pockets.
So dumb. It was so dumb.
Nobody needs that many pockets. I don't give a shit what you've got. Just if you have that many things on your person that you need that many pockets, well, it's not a fucking pants problem. It's a how many things you have on you problem.
Yeah, like how many pockets do you need for all 10 vapes you have?
And why the fuck are you wearing shorts and I can't see your knees? What is it about people's knees that a certain type of dude has decided that they're the equivalent to a sexually reproductive organ and they need to hide that? I don't know what the fuck that is.
We're becoming the people on the internet that we hate. Oh, God, this is where we're at. Three glasses of rum and finally, this is who I am.
Well, I have to admit, I wish I could call my...
It's just so easy. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so easy, and I think that's why... Okay, so I think the big issue is that we present ourselves with these opportunities to be bad people, and I think that's fourth glass of rum.
Ooh, I hear you. I hear you pouring another one. I'm jealous.
And I think the big issue with that is that we, because we, so it's like a perfect storm of bullshit. where we're presented with these opportunities, an unfair amount of opportunities to be terrible to one another. And B, we live under this veil of anonymity on the internet where we don't have to really be held accountable for our actions. And, you know, I think that that's what stops us. Like, that's what hinders us, because we don't, we lack self-restraint. We are part of this, you know, immediate gratification type people. So it's like, I feel this way right now. Why should I have to ever sit back and contemplate the things that I say or how I feel? Because, like, this is what's right in the moment. And so, you know, it's like a Pythagorean theorem of bullshit that leads to, you know, how toxic the internet becomes. And I think for me, it's become that a very conscious effort to, you know, not be that person.
But
you know
also, what I mean? Like, what a wonderful thing that the internet does in weeding out real cunts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's a real, I was thinking while you were talking about this whole bullying thing, and I recently played Devil's Advocate on someone else's podcast where they were talking about bullying and how it needs to be eliminated and things of that nature, which I don't know. I think the knee-jerk reaction is that you want to say it'll never be eliminated. You can't get rid of bullying. But I you know, I don't know if that's true. I'm not very smart. But what I will say is we have derived excellent people as a byproduct of bullying or as a direct result of bullying. People that have become major influences in either society or culture, or even, you know, just kind of historical figures that stepped up to the plate to prove douchebags wrong. And I can't help but feel like if you eliminate bullying, do we miss out on a certain flavor of excellent person?
No, listen, and so, and what I think that's kind of the thing. I think, again, everything is yin and yang, right? So life is a swinging pendulum. I think that if we get to a point where we're too considerate of everybody else's feelings, we get to a point where things become too safe, things become boring, and we all start having missionary sex in the dark and nothing but. And nobody really wants to live that life, but at the same time, you get to a point where the other end of that spectrum is really, really ugly. You know what I mean? And I think that eventually, like I said, I think that we've lived in this time where things have been super volatile for so long, where people's voices have been underrepresented, where, you know, we've kind of lived where, you know, in a world where our whole MO has been trying to, you know, keep other people down. So we're affording these people voices now, and we're finding that people are very hypersensitive. I don't think that that's unreasonable. I think it's very justifiable. But I'm also, this isn't a place of comfort for me. This isn't a place where I want us to stay. I'd like us to be able to get to a point where things just kind of mellow out because of the kind of reactionary things that are happening now. You know what I mean? Whether it's, again, socially, culturally, politically, or even on social media, I think we're getting to a point where it's like, okay, this is either it's going to be like a powder keg where shit just blows up in our faces, or this is really going to be an ebb and flow type of thing where things just kind of ease out. You know, like I said, I think that we're all still learning about the way that all of this kind of stuff works.
And I think in time it will. It'll kind of some sort of something resembling balance is going to emerge from this. It's just in the grand scheme of things, how long is this ability to communicate really been around? And not very long. I mean, YouTube to me is kind of the real birth of the internet. And what was that, like 2006, I think, maybe 2004 at the earliest. Yeah. And so what have we been doing this for 12 years, 14 years, you know, that's nothing. And I think at some point, I think too many people are shouting that this is fucked up. And at some point, it's going to even out. But I do want to, because I don't want to keep you much longer, but there is something that I wanted to ask. I think it's important for my listeners, and I don't know if you'll be able to answer the question. But
anywhere, so.
You are, not to say that your Instagram is an accurate representation of you, because I think if you believe that anyone's Instagram or social media is an accurate representation of that person, then you're kind of missing the mark. But I think what is safe to say about you is you are more comfortable than maybe the vast majority of people at committing to a thing, an adventure, taking on some sort of endeavor. You've seen, I mean, I've got your Instagram open here, and if it's any indicator of, at the least, the places that you've been around the block, and the antithesis of that is a life lived by a lot of people that I know personally, and to a large extent myself, and it's that we don't leave. A lot of people tend not to leave, and I know it's got a lot to do with comfort zones, and I know that it's uncomfortable to put yourself out there. And a lot of the time when you do put yourself out there and you take on the thing that you've been wanting to do, you realize that it's not the giant, daunting obstacle that you thought it was when you started out. But I was curious to see if you had an opinion on how it is that you are seemingly so comfortable with taking on the next thing when so many people have been in the same place since high school.
I mean, listen, the thing, first of all, thank you. I really appreciate that. But I think the thing is that for me, I had never even left the country for the first time until 2 years ago. And it was by some kind of freak occurrence where one of my publishers was like, hey, man, you know, we got invited to go to Paris with so-and-so liquor company, and none of us can make it, and we know you like to party. Do you want to go? Like, can you get a passport in time? And that was literally where it started. But for me, you know, I came from a very cool, blue-collar, hippie family where, you know, my parents did things like ask us how our days were going and all that crazy shit that seems foreign today. And I remember being in the backyard. I was in the garage with my dad. We were working on our motorcycles together. And he asked me, you know, what do you want to do with your life? And my parents have always been super supportive. You know, again, I come from the same fucking neighborhoods as all of our other homies do. I know I didn't have the best upbringing. We didn't have the most money. You know, like things were sketchy for a little bit there. But my parents were always full of love and support. They have endless amounts of that. And my dad asked me what I wanted to do with my life. And I said, you know, I don't know. I have no idea, but I know that I want to travel. You know, I don't know how to do that. I don't know in what capacity I want to do that in, but I want to make sure this is the life that I'm living. And my dad joked, my dad was a ball buster, and he goes, well, dude, listen, man, you better join the army because Barnas don't travel, you know? And to be honest with you, he was right. I was the first person in my family to go to college. And the only reason why I went there wasn't because my parents could afford to send me, but because I got scholarships. You know, the only reason why I went to college was because I got a scholarship for it. And, you know, my dad wound up passing away, and no shit, 2 months later, I got my first invite. It was a domestic press trip to go to Detroit to cover the Detroit Auto Show. And I think that was in, I think March of 2016, give or take. And, you know, I've just been getting opportunities from there. And I think the thing for me, and I was also one of those like blue collar, you know, like, oh, I don't need to fucking travel. But, you know, I've learned everything I've learned about life right here in New Jersey. But I think for me, it's become such a big aspect of the way that I view the world that we live in. And I understand that I'm in a very unique position. That I wish there was some kind of formula where I could just outline it for you and be like, yeah, well, first I did this and then I did this. But to be honest with you, it was just a lot of working. I kept on doing what I do. And somebody somewhere at some point was like, and to be specific, my friends at Cool Material, coolmaterial.com, they're the best guys, they're fucking family. And they kept us, you know, they kept me afloat through some really hard times when my dad first died. And they let me go to the auto show. They really loved the work that I did there. And that turned into this trip to France. And it's just kind of been nonstop. And the thing, and then I think the most beautiful thing about the business that I'm in is that I don't work with anybody prestigious enough to the point where I'm some fucking rock and roll star. If people wanted to stop working with me tomorrow, they could. You know what I mean? The reason why I get invited to places, the reason why I keep getting these opportunities is because, you know, people understand that I'm sincere. They understand that I'm really fucking grateful to be wherever I am, you know? Losing my dad taught me that this shit is over before you know it. And that a lot of us get to die without grace, without doing the things that we wanted to do, without living the lives that we wanted to live. And for me, it's always been, well, you know, fucking go do it. Like, or else, you know what I mean? Like, I've got no illusions about the kind of lifestyle that I live or about how long I'm going to be here. My whole thing is live it wide open until you can't. And I think that's kind of the trajectory that I've tried to be on, is just be grateful for everything. Make sure the people in your life know that you love them, and make sure that your friends are, you know, you're always catching up with them. You're always taking care of them. You never lose sight of what you've come from. So for instance, you know, that sounds fucking cheesy and lame, but it's so real. Like, you know, you commented on it, that we come from this neighborhood or we come from this town where people don't really leave. I have friends who are fucking pipe fitters. I have friends who are firefighters. I have friends who are janitors at Perth Amboy High School. I mean, I have kept all of my friends. I still feel comfortable with every single person that I went to high school with. And I think one of the biggest things for me, one of the most authentic kind of validators isn't fucking Instagram followers. It's that I can come home on a Saturday to see my mom, and I'll have friends hit me up and ask me if I want to go to the bar. And when I get there, I never hear about so-and-so talking shit about me, or so-and-so saying this behind my back, or saying that I don't deserve this. You get welcomed with open arms by people who you fucking love and who you grew up with and who are proud to see you doing your thing. You know, like, I think it's indescribable to know that, you know, when all this stuff started happening, I had friends who would reach out and be like, dude, you fucking deserve this. You know, you're talented, you work hard, you've been through a lot, and I want you to know that I love you and I'm proud of you. You know, like I have friends joke, it's like, oh, well, if you get famous, you know, you better not forget us. And I'm like, well, first of all, that's fucking cute. But second of all, I think that they know that it's not even an option. You know what I mean? And I mean that from the bottom of my fucking heart. I don't care what happens. I don't care what happens from here. I could be dead tomorrow, or I could stay a nobody. But the idea for me is, like, I'm happy. And I don't go to bed feeling guilty. And I go to bed feeling humble and grateful every night. And for me, that's really just that's my MO right now. You know what I mean? Is trying to keep all of this shit in perspective and understand that no one owes me anything, that every single thing I've been given, it's because I deserved it or because somebody felt that I was worthy of it. And, you know, that's just the headspace I'm in. And I think, you know, you don't want to be negative. You know what I mean? Like, I think that once you can see those things kind of start happening to you, I have no fucking desire to be somebody that people envy. You know what I mean? Like the craziest thing to me is I'm on a Facebook group in Philadelphia, and some guy is opening a sandwich shop. And he's like this infamous, he got busted having like a weed party last year or something like that. And where like he invited a bunch of people to a warehouse in our neighborhood to go smoke a bunch of weed, and the cops raided it and he wound up getting arrested. And he's coming out with a sandwich shop, but the guy is already like a local celebrity, and some fucking random girl, for whatever reason, starts trying to lecture him on, like, you know, social media 101, this is what you do here, this is what you do here, these are the kind of sandwiches you should make for vegans. And it's not because I fucking hate when vegans announce they're vegans or whatever. I mean, even though that's annoying, but it's also this, like, you know, you know, I know more than you.
Yeah, that, and who the fuck
are
you?
If this girl was like, oh, well, I run the social media for so-and-so company, She's got like a fucking jewelry company with like 6,000 followers. And you want, and like, listen, I never flex my Instagram nuts on anybody. I'm not that guy. But I had the comment written out where I lectured her about how I've got more followers on my fucking personal account than her. And at the end of it, I was just like, you know what? It's not worth it. You're not this kind of person. Like, let her be that fucking weirdo that she wants people to worship on the internet. But like, that's not you. And you know, I'm particularly conscientious of, you know, the kind of person that I am and how fortunate I am. And I think that, you know, resonates with people. I think that my friends know it. I think that there's not a single fucking person in my life who matters to me that thinks that I feel like I'm owed something or that I'm better than anybody. And I think that that's the most important part of it. You know what I mean? Like I said, if nobody wants to hate the fucking nice guy.
Right. I think, number one, I think that's beautiful and it's absolutely the right mindset to go forward with. I've been in places during my life where I've had that kind of negativity, the complete opposite of happy to be here, thankful for opportunities, happy to be surrounded with the people that I'm surrounded with. And that sort of mindset breeds only that, the same thing over again. It's more negativity. It's almost training yourself to look for the bullshit wherever it exists. And at the end of the day, the bullshit is everywhere. But so are the little beautiful moments and the awesome people that you're surrounded with and the opportunities that you have on a daily basis, the cool things that you get to see and the communication that you get to have with friends and family. And it's a shame when people don't realize that. When you bump into that odd fucker who does nothing but complain every time you see him, you know, working in metal shops, I see those dudes every day, you know, that nothing's ever right. The coffee truck's never on time. Whatever the hell the deal is, something is always wrong. And don't get me wrong, sometimes I complain and I think everybody does a little bit, but
if
you're not taking the time to realize how good you have it, you're missing out. And it's almost like that little mental trick that if you smile, you can actually trick yourself into feeling happier. If you just force yourself to smile, it'll produce whatever the chemical is, the endorphins that trigger happiness. And I think the same goes for if you look for things to be happy about, before you know it, you'll be finding them everywhere. And there's a shit ton to be happy about. So, you know, don't get caught up in spotting out the bullshit wherever it is, because it's there. It's always going to be there. And you could choose to harp on about it and let it consume you, because it will. After a while, you'll become so good at spotting it that it'll be all that you see, and you'll be blinded to the awesome shit that's around you everywhere.
100%, man. You nailed it.
What's next for you? Do you have anything on the horizon?
To be honest with you, I'm just looking forward to deep frying this turkey on Thursday.
Yeah, buddy.
I just went out and grabbed it today. We got a 17-pound bird.
Deep frying.
That we're throwing in the deep fryer. We're going to really test the limits of our deep fryer because, you know, Thanksgiving is metal and so are fucking grease fires. So
I'm spending my Thanksgiving with the.
Honestly. With Keith. What happened?
I said I'm actually spending my Thanksgiving with Keith.
Oh, nice, man. Dude, yeah. Keith is my dude. He hit me up like a year ago. And he was honestly, when I did my welding course with him, he was just such a nice dude and he was so helpful. Like, I miss welding so bad. I gotta figure my shit out because I need to get back into that. But other than that, I don't have any trips scheduled right now. I tried to take off for all of November and December so I can work and actually catch up on stuff. I just started some pretty exciting projects with the guys over at HIMS, doing their like social media content and their editorial content. So that's pretty exciting. I've been working with them for a long time. But other than that, I'm just trying to put my head down, keep my mouth shut, and keep working.
Well, that's great, man. yeah, definitely. You know, the holidays are coming up. Enjoy your holidays. Hopefully we don't get any more snow till December. That would be beautiful. I think I can live with that. But, you know, good luck to you. And I'm going to sign off here, but stick around for me. I'm just getting off YouTube. All right. So thank you, Max, for doing this. And I'd like to do it again in the future. There's a lot that I didn't get to touch on that I wanted to, but I kind of am on a little bit of a time restraint.
I'm with you, brother. Hey, man, and thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it. This was fun. Got to drink a lot of rum and, you know, stumbled through some words. It was great. Excellent experience. 10 out of 10.
All right, Max. Well, I really appreciate it. And like I said, just stick around. I'm going to sign off YouTube here. All right, guys. Thank you for watching. And until next time, peace out.